a little bit and talk about treatment of injuries instead of epidemiology of injuries. First off, are there any clinicians in the room? No. Okay. Interesting. Fascinating. One. Right. So I'm going to be talking about nurse practitioners in Washington and Oregon, and I'll talk to you about specifically why I'm interested in nurse practitioners and why I'm in those states. Part of the reason I'm interested in nurse practitioners is because I'm in a college of nursing, but I do have a background in public health, and I'm not a practitioner or a clinician myself, so that's where I'm at. No disclosures to declare. I'm not going to talk too much about concussions because I think that most people in this room know that head injuries are a big deal among adolescents. This is a figure from AHRQ from 2008, but it just signifies, if you look on the left-hand column, those are sports-related concussions. The teal bar that says 57.9, so 57.9 of sports-related concussions occur between 14 and 18-year-old individuals. So, you know, it's very common among young people. Some estimates, and there are a variety of estimates that you can use, but, you know, lots of emergency department visits for sports and recreation-related head injuries in children and adolescents. There are long-term impacts, not only financial and missing school, but also physical, cognitive, social, and psychological impacts that can really have severe consequences on these individuals who are trying to complete schooling, and that should be a primary concern. Some studies have shown that providers, and this is not just nurses that I'm talking about, but all types of providers and primary care providers, have low adherence to recommendations. There's a study by Arbogast showing that while they recommend cognitive rest for following a concussion, and their jury's kind of out on cognitive rest, but the recommendation currently is that an individual with a concussion should have some sort of cognitive rest afterwards. Even though that's recommended, only 11% of medical records that they reviewed indicated some sort of recommendation around cognitive rest. Providers have indicated that they've had inadequate training and infrastructure around concussions, and there are gaps in knowledge. A study in Ontario showed that only 37% of recommended treatment for concussed in adolescents followed the graduated return to play guidelines. So there are some holes in how we're treating these individuals. It's a big deal. And we're particularly interested in Washington and Oregon because Washington, as many of you know, kind of led the way in terms of the Zachary Leisted law. And they were the first state to really require that there was limited return to sports participation following concussion. I mean, it requires a provider approval, and that could be physician, nurse practitioner, physician's assistant, and in limited cases, a psychologist or a certified athletic trainer. In Washington and Oregon, so these two states, so Oregon has similar legislation now, most states do. Nurse practitioners are independent licensed providers in Washington and Oregon, so they can operate independently, and they have the statutory authority to release to play and authorize a management and treatment of concussions. Particularly in rural areas, nurse practitioners and physician's assistants are primary care providers for families. And so we were interested in kind of the perspective of nurse practitioners in treating these concussed individuals. So the objectives of the study were to examine nurse practitioner knowledge regarding the diagnosis of adolescent sports-related concussions, the familiarity of the CDC's with the CDC's Heads Up Toolkit, and the use of standardized concussion assessment tools like the ACE or SCAT, variety of different tools that exist out there. This is a web-based survey. We surveyed all nurse practitioners in Washington and Oregon, roughly 4,800 of them. There was an embedded patient scenario video within the survey. So what we did is we got actors, professional actors, had it produced professionally of a nurse practitioner walking in and saying, "So, Johnny, how are you feeling today? What are you here for?" And the mom's like, "He fell at practice." And you'll see, because I actually have a video here to show you guys. You'll see that they're not professional actors, really, but you'll see how you think of it. But the symptoms were reviewed by, designed by a nurse practitioner, and were reviewed. They are consistent with a concussion. And then we had a long questionnaire asking them about their diagnosis and management of this individual. If this were their patient, what would they do? Whether or not they're familiar with resources, and then, of course, demographic characteristics. So here is the video.
"Hi, this is Sanders from Patrick. Can you tell me what brings you here to the clinic? For getting a Patrick checked out due to a fall that took place over the weekend, I don't know a lot about it today because he was staying at my mother's house over the weekend. Honestly, I don't think she takes things too seriously."
"No, playing soccer with my friends when I slipped on the grass and fell backwards. I guess I hit my head, but to tell you the truth, I was a little bit more concerned about my knee. It felt a little weird, and I'm a pretty active person, so I was scared that I hurt it.
Okay, so how's your knee now?
It's fine. In my opinion, there wasn't really much of a reason to bring me here. I'm missing my algebra classes, we sit here.
Just tell the nurse practitioner the facts, okay?
Let me make sure I have everything straight. So this event happened 3 days ago. There were other people present.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened after you fell?
I got right back up and went over to a bench.
Okay.
I put a wrap on my knee, and then I decided to go back to my parents' house. We were almost done hanging out.
Did you lose consciousness?
If I did, no one said so. Like I said, I got right back up.
And how did you get home?
I walked. It was just a short game near my park. When I got home, I put some ice on my knee, took a Tylenol, and then fell asleep. I did have a slight headache and felt a little sick to my stomach.
Did you throw up?
No, but I thought I might.
And then what happened?
I slept for a really long time, until breakfast, and then I woke up. I still had a headache, so I took some Tylenol. Then I had some cereal. I asked my grandma to drive me to school.
Alright, is there anything else you want to mention about the event or that evening?
Not really. This one seems kind of irritating me.
See, that's what I mean. Patrick is not usually quite so rude.
Not a woman.
What I mean is he's just been acting a little bit more irritable and kind of spacey. It's hard to tell with a teenager, right? I've just been trying to roll with it. I've been giving him Tylenol regular strength every 6 to 8 hours, just like the bottle says. And the other night he complained of a stomach ache, so I gave him some Maalox.
Okay, so you're still having a headache and some nausea. Is it okay if I ask a few more questions?
Whatever.
Are you having any changes in your vision?
No.
Any sensitivity to light or noise?
What do you mean by sensitivity?
Does light seem brighter or uncomfortable? And do noises seem louder or irritating?
Kind of. My computer screen was kind of bright, so I had to turn down the lighting. I haven't noticed anything about noises, though.
Okay, what about school?
Okay, so I'm not going to continue, unless you guys really are interested in Patrick and what happened here. Okay, we actually did 4 different videos, and if anyone wants to talk to me afterwards about what our plans are with the 4 videos, but they're different types of sports and different genders of individuals, and we're interested in looking at how recommendations vary. So all of the nurse practitioners were randomly assigned to receive different videos. That was our IT's person's son, Patrick. His name really is Patrick. So we administered this to all family pediatric psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners. There are also acute care and adult nurse practitioners in Washington and Oregon. There were 4,600 approximately. And we made multiple contacts. It was like pulling teeth to get these. And this is really common among healthcare providers to get people to respond. And we didn't have an incentive. Usually a pre-incentive works really well. We worked with Don Dillman's group, which is really well-known survey researcher, and they like really send them money ahead of time. But this is a very low-budget grant. So we ended up doing a raffle or a lottery for an iPad Mini, which was distributed to somebody in Oregon at the end of the study. And so we were interested in primary outcomes were correct diagnosis of the patient in the video, that they had a concussion, and it was also a mild TBI, because concussion and mild TBI are the same thing, right? Note that for the future, because we're going to talk about that. Familiarity with heads up, whether or not they knew what heads up was, and then use of standardized assessment tools. We used chi-score tests, and then modified Poisson regression to look at relative risks. I'd like to estimate likelihood for each of the outcomes, and the factors that we adjusted for were training, so what were they certified, what kind of nurse practitioner they were, sex, age, what year they received their license, whether they worked in an outpatient setting, percent of their patients that were pediatric, and the number of concussions they diagnosed in the last year. And we're kind of interested in what factors contribute to how they responded to the questions. So overall, we had a 23% response rate, which we were pretty proud of. It took about 5 months to get there. And this is sort of respondents versus non-respondents. They're pretty similar. Slightly more psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners, fewer pediatric, which is disappointing given that pediatric nurse practitioners are likely going to see some of these folks. But and then a lot of them were unspecified. We didn't have very good, for the non-respondents, we didn't really know what they what their training was, except for by state licensure records. Oh, by the way, we also included individuals who had residential addresses in Idaho, California, bordering states within a within a commutable distance. I think it was within 60 miles of the border. We included them, so I map-quested everybody who lived across the border and then included them. But we eliminated anybody who was like living in Arizona or had a mailing address in Arizona. So this is the results. This is diagnosis of concussion. So up and down, you'll see the what they endorsed, very likely, somewhat likely, unsure, somewhat unlikely, very unlikely, and missing. So this is whether or not, how likely was it that this is a concussion? On the left, you'll see that 63% of the people said it's very likely concussion. We made sure to say that this is all head injury. This is, we didn't want to say this is a concussion or not. So all the literature in the survey said this is a head injury. Unfortunately, though, only 24% of them said that it was very likely a mild TBI. So the nurse practitioners are not connecting the fact that a mild TBI and a concussion are the same thing, which is somewhat concerning. These are factors associated with stating that it was somewhat or likely a concussion or mild TBI. So I'm going to report the relative risk, so adjusted relative, unadjusted relative risk, and then the adjusted relative risk, adjusted for all of those factors there in the model. This is a big table, but I'm going to highlight a couple of things here. On the first top left, you'll see concussion. In the top right, you'll see mild TBI. And then these are all of the factors in the model. Here for concussion, adult nurse practitioners, so people are certified as an adult nurse practitioner, were 3% more likely, but very limited significance. So I don't know how seriously I would take that. This is compared to family nurse practitioners. Slightly more likely, people who saw more pediatric patients, adjusted for all their factors in the model, were more likely to say that this is a concussion. And then the more concussions, imagine this, the more concussions that you see, the more likely your diagnosis is a concussion. Experience does make a difference. Acute care nurse practitioners were 30% or 29% more likely than family nurse practitioners to indicate that this is a concussion. That this is a mild TBI. Looking at the Heads Up Toolkit, 35% of the nurse practitioners were familiar with the Heads Up Toolkit. And these are factors associated with familiarity with the Heads Up Toolkit. And we see that psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners were less likely than family nurse practitioners, significantly less likely to be familiar with the Heads Up Toolkit. That is a really interesting factor, and I'd be interested to talk to anyone who's kind of interested in this type of thing afterwards. We are going to be targeting psychiatric nurse practitioners in the future. It was a large proportion of our respondents, and they will see individuals potentially with concussion sequelae, but they don't really think that they see concussed patients, and so it's a major issue. And then also the number of concussions that you've seen, more likely you're going to be familiar with Heads Up Toolkit, which kind of makes sense. In terms of standardized tools, 26% of the respondents indicated that they frequently use standardized assessment tools, so not that many. Here are the relative risks. So we see that psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners not using standardized concussion assessment tools. And there's no necessarily a gatekeeper to see a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. They can be your first primary contact at post-concussion. So it's not like they need a referral necessarily. Compared to individuals who see fewer pediatric patients, those who see more are more likely to use a standardized assessment tool. And again, the more concussions that you see, the more likely, significantly more likely, they're going to be familiar with these tools. So some limitations of this study, it's a standardized patient scenario that, isn't a real patient, so they're not able to ask the patient questions. We got a lot of responses back in our free text of like, I would have asked them this. Nurses are very chatty in terms of, recommendations and what they think, should be in the survey. And we did get a lot of responses back from the psychiatric nurse practitioners saying, I would never see this patient, this is a waste of my time, these patients aren't in my practice, that sort of thing, and so that's why we're interested in kind of pursuing that line of research. But this is also a self-reported clinical behavior. We don't really know what they would diagnose somebody in reality. So this is you're answering a survey, it's not like you're filling out your EMR, it's not a real patient. Some implications of this, the nurse practitioners in the survey exhibited some gaps in the knowledge and practice. We'd like to see that all nurse practitioners have in their toolkit of assessment diagnosis at least familiarity with the Heads Up Toolkit, that their experience was associated, so more experience was associated with having appropriate diagnosis, concussion knowledge, and use of tools, so the more concussions they see, the better off they are, and that there is variation across training specialties. In terms of what next, we know that nurse practitioners may not use the concussion materials. This is consistent with other research that providers don't actively use resources like Heads Up, so that's an area of outreach that we're interested in. And then we're going to be using this results to generate an action plan for at least some continuing education in Washington and Oregon for our nurse practitioners. So this is funded by a new faculty seed grant at Washington State University, American Nurses Foundation's grant, and then some thanks to all the nurse practitioners who completed the survey. Right. Well, it's within their scope of practice in that they can be seen, and they are still authorized to return to play. So there's a possibility that a pediatric patient could walk into their practice. So they should be prepared for that to a degree. But we did have a fair degree of missing, more so in the mild TBI question than for the concussion question. But it was only 4% that didn't respond to that question.
In the state of Texas, you see, you see the family, you see everybody. Then an adult, you know, if a child comes in, you're not supposed to see the child.
Right.
You're an adult certified nurse practitioner.
Right.
Same thing with the psychiatric mental health.
Right. So these psychiatric mental health nurse practitioners could see these patients.
That in itself, that's, I don't know that, but I thought so far, is what we don't think that is going to happen.
Right.
Please.
For the Center from Kentucky, first of all, thank you all for great presentations today. The Center from Kentucky, I know you said that you didn't have complete enough data to look at injury severity. Did you have even a subset of schools where you could look at days missing from participation? And I'll tell you why that. I expect, based on previous research I've seen, that the difference you saw between middle school and high school athletes is probably because of your estimation of exposures. If the high school athletes are missing more time for the injuries that they sustain, you're giving them credit for too many exposures and thus artificially decreasing your injury rates.
Right.
So could you go back and look at a subset where you did have that data and try to see if that's true or not?
We have the data for one of the high schools and three of the middle schools. We have the data out of the two high schools and the nine middle schools. So we do have that.
It might be interesting, you might not have enough power, but it might be interesting to go back and see what you found there, extrapolate that to your full set, and see if you have the same findings or if it was like great study. Thank you.
I still have a question for you as well. For the athletic trainers that were, monitoring the injuries, was it reported, was it just their interaction with the students, or was it a conversation that could also happen with the parents? Because I would feel like there'd be more interaction with a parent and an athletic trainer from middle school than they're looking for high school, and that might affect the results.
It was only for interaction with the students themselves. Surprisingly, we really didn't have that many cases where a parent, like, hey, I know they didn't say anything to you, but can you please look at this athlete? I would say it was pretty even to middle school, as far as the parents that were a little more involved.
Tom, if I ask you a question about it here in the public forum, can you go back and tell the NCAA that there's queries about why they don't have cheerleading and motivating?
you guys got to know, right? And Zach picked you guys up for your coach. We're adding it to our system.
Good.
We also added rodeo element. We're adding it. What's the other sport we're adding? But again, the NCAA only asked us to track data on 39 championship sports. Right now, we only have enough participation for 25. But we are adding cheerleading this year, and then also rodeo, and then one other sport, I forget.
All right,
do
you have cheerleading, I'll add rodeo.
Can I ask a question? Is rodeo, is that equestrian sports then?
No, it's like rodeo.
So not, what about that?
It's like a club sport at most places, I guess. But
But no intention for equestrian?
I'm not knowledgeable enough about the two sports. I don't know if they were kind of combined at some schools.
Never.
No, we would never combine equestrian and
pro. I don't know if they use the same practice grounds or whatnot, but yeah, so I think it's just really good right now.
Okay. You might think about equestrian in the future, a lot of serious injuries from this.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Any other questions? No? You can always come forward and ask intimate questions. I want to thank you, our audience, and also panelists for being here today.